Hey, what's going on, everyone? Thanks for tuning back in to the Davidson Hang podcast. I'm excited to introduce you, Michelle No. And we met through an event talking about speaking against the anti-Asian hate crimes and just sort of our experience with microaggressions and things that have happened. But Michelle is currently a Verizon media executive. She's a VP and head of client services and operations. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, excited to have you here. And it's awesome to meet to see successful Vietnamese people, right? Because I think most of the Asian executives I meet are typically Chinese. Yeah. I would say that's much more common. And also, you know, women too, right? I feel like there's probably more, I've met more Asian male executives in my corporate career as well.
Yeah, so, same.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you have a group, like a powerful group of like Asian or even Vietnamese executives that you guys all get together or?
You know, I don't. It's a great question. I've never actually been asked that question before. You know, I think, you know, from my LinkedIn profile, I've been at the same company for almost 18 years. I think I hit my 18th anniversary in a couple weeks. So that's really where I've grown up. Right. Like I've grown up here. I started as an IC and just kind of worked my way up over the years. And so it hasn't been something where I've gone and sought it out. You know, I've certainly been very lucky over the years to have some amazing peers and partners and mentors and bosses. And, you know, and I could probably spend hours talking about what each of them have brought to me and to my career and to my life. But it hasn't been something I've like specifically sought out. And I don't know why, but it's not something that I felt like I needed maybe.
Yeah. It sounds like you've had so many mentors of all different types of backgrounds and ethnicities and genders that,
you
have a really strong group that have supported you throughout your career in general.
Yeah. And, you know, I would say like, you know, it's funny. I was telling someone the other day, the person I work for now is a female executive. She's the first woman I've ever worked for. Everyone that I've worked for has been a man, but that hasn't been anything that I felt like held me back or, you know, didn't provide me with the opportunities of anything. All of those folks that I worked for have championed opportunities for me, have championed me into, you know, it's a running joke with my husband that, you know, I always say, oh my God, I never want my boss's job. And then like somehow, and then within the next year or two, like I have my boss's job. But it's, you know, it's partly obviously my work and what I've been able to do, but also it's people thinking of me and giving me that opportunity and providing me with the skills and, you know, the feedback and the advice so that I'm ready for those roles when they come. So it's not something where I felt like that's ever been something missing. Whether it's been, you know, female mentors or even, you know, Asian peers and you know, colleagues that I felt like I needed, I guess, in my career.
I'm curious, do you think it's a self-fulfilling prophecy when we do kind of blame our race and our gender? I mean, not to say, because clearly there is a gap if you look at the data, but sure. Sometimes like I feel like people are focusing too much on that and less on what I can do to, I don't know. It's a tough.
It's one of those like chicken and egg, you know, conversations, right? Where like I do really strongly believe that because of where you come from, what you look like, maybe how you speak, there are some limiting. There's a limiting to the opportunities, right? It's like, you know, people will say, "Oh, I didn't realize that you could do that," or "I didn't realize you could write like that," or you know, "Wow, your English is really good." It's like, yeah, I mean, I've been speaking English since I was like, you know, five or whatever. But, you know, I think there's, I think it also is the environment that you're in where it doesn't really matter. I've been really lucky that, you know, at Verizon Media, before that was Oath and Yahoo, that I've been able to celebrate my journey, right? Like, I think one of the reasons why that, you know, we were able to meet was because, you know, one of my colleagues had put me up to talk on this panel. And it was really about like, how do we, instead of talking about, you know, obviously you want to acknowledge the pain and everything that part of the journey, because you have to. If you don't do that, obviously it just will fester and kind of be there always. But I also think like we should be celebrating, right? Like the fact that, you know, I'm a female, I'm Vietnamese, my parents weren't born here, I wasn't born here. And I've been able to get to where I got to. I mean, a lot of hard work and certainly a lot of luck in terms of being in the right place at the right time and knowing the right people and all that. But, you know, I do think, like, back to your question, there, I don't know if it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, but I do think we have to acknowledge that there are, you know, significant barriers for most people, especially, you know, folks that don't have access to education. You know, like, you know, my story is I went to private school and I went to a really good university. And, you know, my dad, my parents are educated and, you know, they have, my dad has a PhD and my mom has two masters. So you know, I it's one of those, like, I think my parents really helped. Just, it wasn't ever a question, right, of whether I would be going to college or not. I wasn't the first person to go to college in my family. I wasn't, you know, my sister has a PhD. I'm the least educated person in my family. Right. So do you know what I'm saying? Like, and yeah. So I do think it's a combination of many, many things. It's where your family's from, what they've been able to accomplish, you know, what opportunities they're able to provide for you, what opportunities you're able to seek out for yourself. Do you have the monetary ability to do some of those things? Right. Like, and I think there's a combination of a lot of things. You know, I have cousins who are really successful, run their own companies, and their parents came over by boat and, you know, don't have a lot, right? So I think it's just a matter of there's a will and a determination that I think is really, really important. There's a work ethic that's really important. I think that's a very, you know, big part of our culture, is just work really, really hard. I think sometimes people have to work much harder than other people do. And I think that's a real thing. I do.
Mm. I have this conversation a lot with Asian folks. I think hard work is, I mean, it's hard to put a percentage on it, but like maybe half of it, right? But then the other half is also like being effective and actually knowing, building champions and things like that too, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it's hard. So what percentage would you say hard work has on, you know, being able to move up like corporate ladder, for instance?
I think I can only speak to kind of my experience. I would say hard work was probably like 75%. And not like, oh my God, I'm going to put my head down and work. But I really had to find ways to innovate, be creative, challenge status quo in a way that brought people with me. Like, that's my biggest like leadership philosophy is, if I'm going to move ahead and do different things, I want people to come with me, and I can't do it by myself. So, you know, as a leader of a big org, like, that's really resonated with my team, because I know it's not just me. Like, I can't do it by myself. I need everyone to do it with me, not for me, but with me. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think that there's hard work, I think, is a lot of it, because, you know, I was never the person who like asked for, I want that promotion, I need that promotion. I just never could get those words. Like, it's probably the first time I've ever said that, those words out of my mouth, because I always felt strongly that my work should speak for itself. Mostly speak for itself. Obviously, you want to put yourself in a position where you're visible, where you're able to kind of connect with maybe different leaders who isn't your direct manager, that kind of thing. So you have people in the room when people are talking about, you know, when those decisions are made, you're usually not in the room, right? You're not going, yeah, hey, I'm ready for a VP, or I'm ready for that next role. Mm-hmm. Usually that decision is made behind closed doors and you're not a part of it. So have you influenced, impacted, worked with enough people who are in that room where they're like, oh, absolutely, that should be Michelle's job, or that should be her promotion, right? So for me, I've never been one to, you know, use the networking part as my primary way of advancing. It's always been the hard work and finding ways to impact the org that where other people aren't doing it, but know it's needed and they just haven't put forth the effort, or it's too hard to. And I, you know, that's the operational part of me, right? Like, I'm able to like get groups together and figure it out and figure out how to do it from step one to step 10 and get to resolution, right? Like, that's just how my brain works. And so I think that's the hard work that has really helped me. And then I think the last 20-25% is probably, to your point, knowing the right people, talking to the right people, having the right champions, you know, having the right people think of you when that opportunity comes up. Like, I always tell my, you know, people who ask me all the time about like, hey, how did you do this? And how did you move forward in your career? You know, I think it's doing the work ahead of time, because if you do the work when the opportunity arises, it's too late.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, I always say when a hiring manager, especially an internal hire, thinks has an opening, they're already in their mind before that person, when that person says, hey, I'm leaving for whatever reason, internal, external, in their mind, they're like, oh, I got two people. I know those two people that I want to go after. right? Like, yes, I'm sure there are 20 people who are interested in that role, but already in their mind, there's two people or one person who's already expressed interest, done some work towards it, spent some time with them, understood what the skill gaps were, worked on that, right? So a lot of the work, I think, happens before those opportunities even arise.
And how do you know how early you should start working on that, right? Because what if you just started?
You know, that's a great question, because I get that question a lot too, where, you know, it's how long do I spend mastering my job?
Yeah.
And when do I switch to, I've got the job down, and when do I start the other stuff? I think it's kind of always, you know, I remember being new and just asking, I wasn't actually doing anything, but I was asking questions like, hey, why do you guys do it that way? And we're like, oh, I don't know. That's a good question. We've always done it that way. Like, well, have you ever thought about doing it this way? And it wasn't that I knew the business at all, because I was like brand new and just started and had never done advertising before, but you know, I had a good head on my shoulders. I'd worked at different companies before, and it was just more kind of like asking the question, and you might not be the one tapped to actually fix it, but at least you're bringing it up. So I would say even in your first couple of days, like just kind of get a lay of the land and start asking smart questions and asking challenging status quo in a way that's productive, not like, oh my God, I can't believe you guys do it this way. It's, hey, have you ever thought about doing it that way? Or could we do it both ways and see what works better? You know, that kind of thing. I would say, like, you know, starting as an AM years and years and years ago now, Like I said, I knew nothing. I didn't even know how to like do anything in Excel. I think I knew how to sum it up in Excel. And that was like as far as I could go. But I remember being able to ask questions and they were like, oh, that's an interesting thing. Let's have these three guys run at that, you know, and see if we can do something. It was like, you know, how could we do it that solves a problem for maybe my book or somebody else's book? And then it scales and then it solves it for everybody. Because if it's a problem for me, it's likely a problem for other people. Right. So that's kind of how I've always approached it. It's not just about me and fixing it for me. It's always about fixing it for everybody. So I would say, like, start as soon as you can, because that's just a mentality I think everyone should have. I try to get my kids to do the same thing, right? It's like, question me in a way that's respectful and polite.
Right.
I'll be like, hey, well, can I do it that way? I'm like, oh, yeah, sure. You know, like, you know, I try to be like, we're pretty scheduled, right? I've got two kids and lots of sports and all that. But my son will be like, hey, instead of leaving at 4, can we leave at 3:50? And that way I can do this and this and this. And I said, sure. Right. So it's really simple. It's just a matter of how you deliver that question and the message so that it's not attacking how someone's doing it, but it's additive.
I mean, I feel like that topic alone, we could probably spend a lot of time just on that statement. Sure. So how does one say it in a way that doesn't seem so confronting that they'll actually feel like, oh, okay, like there's good intentions behind this question?
You know, and I think that there are ways to do it. There's ways to caveat questions, or, you know, when you challenge someone, you know, that's something that I've had to learn over the years, where, you know, you could go at someone really directly and it could be really, they could take it really, you know, in a hard way or in a very offensive way. Or you could say, you know what, I'm not sure even you probably have thought about this, but have you ever considered doing it this way? Right. Or, you know, maybe I missed this, and, you know, almost like having it be a little bit more on me than on somebody else. You know, I'll give you an example. I think when I first started as an AM years and years ago, we didn't have like a campaign tracker. Like, we didn't know what client was ours and like what they were doing. And I said, you know, like, is there any way, like, you know, I'm struggling trying to keep up with my book. Is there any way we could build a tracker that could, you know, track all my campaigns and who's who and when it ends, so that I know when to go renew them and all those things? And I go, and, you know, could we get our India team to just scale that for everybody? Like, maybe use it once a week, maybe use it every day. But, and so it wasn't anything that was, you know, people are like, oh, wow, that's, I hadn't thought about that. Or I didn't know how I would even get that off the ground. And so it was almost like I was trying to solve it for me, or I took it on myself to kind of say, hey, I'm struggling or I'm having a hard time. I need to fix it for me. And do you think you could benefit from that? Let me do the work so that you can benefit.
Huh? Yeah. That's genius. I like what you said about, like, oh, you probably have thought about this. It's like you're giving them the credit, or I wouldn't say like stroking their ego, but it's like, it's a softer way, right? It's kind of like assumptive in a way.
Yeah. And you know, and then I've had people say that to me, and you know, like, you know what, I have, and I just never really figured out how to do it. Do you have an idea on how to do it? And that's been like, then it starts another whole project, right? Because, you know, there, how many ideas, I mean, I don't sleep that much. And, you know, at night I lie in bed and they're like ideas just flying through my head. I'm like, oh, I should probably do that. Or I need to do that. And then it just, it's a passing moment, right? And then the next day, life gets in the way, work gets in the way. And then the stuff that I thought about at 1 o'clock in the morning doesn't ever happen, right? So I think, I do think there's something to be said for what you said, like acknowledging that probably someone's already had that question, that it's not just like you're the most brilliant person and like you're coming up with everything, because that's certainly not true. Certainly with me, that's not true. But that, how can I leverage my strengths to help operationalize that? Because that's where I know that's where I've done a lot of good work, right? Is I can take a really complex idea, make it really simple, get everybody's buy-in, and then move it forward, right? So how can I help there, right? And so then I ask, I offer my services, and I'm like, I had a meeting the other day with a colleague who said, hey, we don't have enough case studies. And I said, okay, but why? They're like, well, I think it's hard to ask. I think it's hard to submit. I think it's hard to, you know, get people to agree. I said, so then, you know, we talk through, I'm like, hey, you know, make them off the shelf and make a submission form. And they're like, oh my gosh, like I hadn't thought about those things. And I said, hey, run with it. If you need my help, I'm here to help. Right. So those kind of things where it's like, I'm not here to take credit. I'm here to help and make everyone successful. And that's always, I think, been my MO, whether I was as an IC or as a low level manager, or even now as a VP, I have no need to be like, oh yeah, that was me. I did that. Right. Because if they do that and it's successful, guess what? And it's in my org and it's on my team and it affects my business, then I succeed with that. So that's something I never really felt the need for that. And I think that part's really important, because if you can influence and impact in ways that maybe aren't that visible, and people are more successful for it, and the org is more successful for it, and the team is, then I still win.
Interesting. So are you always thinking of ways like to improve everything? Like is it, so is it hard to turn off sometimes?
Very. But you know what though? Like, I think I've learned to make it like a really positive skill. You know, for example, like my son plays baseball. He's a 12-year-old baseball player. He's pretty good. He plays travel baseball, and I run operations for his baseball organization. And running operations, like answering emails, scheduling, ordering uniforms, but it's 10 teams.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like 160 players. It's a lot of parents, more parents than players, which, you know what that means, like a lot more questions, like, and, you know, but I leverage one, it helps me control the experience for him. But I also know that as a parent, how would I want to receive information, right? Our coaches are not communicators. They're coaches. They know baseball. They can teach my kid baseball, but, you know, to send out an email that's descriptive and like where you need to be at what time, wearing what, and here's who's bringing snacks and all, like, that's not them, right? So I tried to use that urge to operationalize everything in a positive way. I try. So I do it outside of work. I do it at work. But I will say this. I think at work, you know, something that I'm really, really proud of is the ability to get everyone to buy in into that notion, that initiative, and like collectively move it forward. You know, I'll give you an example. A couple of years ago, I was talking to, you know, one of the leaders on my team, and I said, hey, I'd love to get some sort of leadership program off the ground. It's something I thought about for years and years. It's like, how do you help prepare leaders before they become leaders? Like, you know, I've been a manager for a long time. No one ever taught me how to be a manager before I became a manager. I like learned it. Like, I just got thrown in as like, go figure it out, you know, but how much better would I have been that first 9 months if I had someone teach me how to give performance feedback, deal with change management, understand the difference between an IC and a manager, and how to influence a business if you don't necessarily touch clients every day, those kind of things. And so I kind of gave him this idea, and I said, look, I said, what do you think? He's like, I think I can figure it out. I was like, well, let's sit down for half an hour and like just think about it. We try to operationalize like the application process and what the selection committee would be. And now it's become a full-fledged program, right? Where like every 6 months we have 20, 25 ICs go through, higher level ICs go through a leadership development program, where even if they don't become managers right away, now they understand, one, they can validate that path for themselves. Because guess what? Everyone goes, I either want to be, certainly in our work, I want to be a seller, or I want to be a people manager. And those are the two most traveled paths. But do you even know what a people manager does? Do you know how they have to function every day, the things they have to do that you don't ever see? Mm-hmm. And so what this is exposes them to that. It helps them validate or invalidate that path for them. Because the worst thing to do is take the job and you're like, oh my God, I really don't want this. Right. And I think it happens to some people. They just do it because they don't know how to get out of it. Right. But if you go through a program like that, then you can say, oh yeah, that's not for me. I'm going to go do something else. But, you know, back to what I was saying, like we sat there for half an hour, and I just told him everything that I was thinking. He was like all on board. And now he runs that whole program for our org. Right. So it's like, no one knows that that was a conversation or an idea that came from me. Mm-hmm. And it's something that he's built and created and run and still runs very well to this day. And that's like, that's great, because guess what? We've had every manager that we've hired in my org has come from that program. Wow. So win-win, right? Do you know what I'm saying? So I try to put that urge to like control and operationalize and put everything in a process. And, you know, I try to do it in a positive way. I'm sure sometimes I get on my husband's nerves where I'm like, you know, pre-planning vacations to the hour, but you know, I think he's gotten used to that.
So where do you find that fine balance between like perfectionism or just doing it excellent enough that it's like good, you know?
You know, I think I had to learn that when I became a manager, because as an IC, I was a perfectionist. I did everything. I never outsourced anything. I did all, you know, I did every report on my own. I did, you know, and I always got dinged for like, why don't you use your ad ops people or your team in India? Like I never did. I couldn't relinquish that control. And I think, you know, even as a lower level manager, I struggled a little bit with not telling my team how to do it the way I would have done it. And I think in the first year, I struggled a lot with that, because I felt like I was, you know, I was good at my job. I knew what I was doing, and you should do it the way I did it, because look where I got to. And I think that over the years, as my org has grown and I'm not able to do everything, and it's just not physically possible. Yeah. I had to empower and trust my team to do it. And then I think as I've gotten older and realized that there are many different ways to do different things, right? And sometimes you might not get to the same result, but maybe their result's better than my result would have been, right? Like I know that that's happened in the past, that I think I've just been more comfortable with that, that, you know, I try to give my team the guardrails and the air cover and the idea as much as I can. And if they want to run with it that way, great. Mm. I would have run with it this way. That's me, but you know what I mean? But yeah. I think sometimes it's surprising how often I'm like pleasantly surprised by where they got to, how they got there. And I wouldn't have gone that way myself. And so it's nice to see that, right? Like there's just different ways to execute against something, and not one way, you know, one way is not the only way. And I think that's something that I've learned that with parenting too, right?
Like, yeah. I was going to say, this sounds like a parenting thing.
Yeah, right. So I'm sure I've messed up with my kids, and, you know, we've learned together. And, you know, and I think that being having to be able to have not having full control of just me and, you know, and just my life, I think I've just had to learn that over the years as my world has gotten bigger and broader and more chaotic. I just have to trust that people will be able to do what they need to do.
That's interesting. So there's some element of faith where like it'll just work out, right? But how do we know? Because I mean, clearly you've been successful. So, you know, like your high standard of excellence has helped you get pretty far in life. But I don't know. I feel like sometimes if you relinquish too much control, oh, like you said, you just had good guidelines and you're like good at like pushing them in the right direction.
Yeah. And I will say, like, you know, I would hope that my team would say that, that I give them a lot of rope because I trust that they'll do what's right for the team and what's right for the business. But a lot of it is, we've built the foundation of what's expected, right? It's not like, hey, here's a lot of rope. You don't know what you're doing. And I have given you no guidelines and no expectations, figure it out. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, we spent a lot of time building that foundation of what's our team. How do we work together? You know, what's the reputation and brand we want to have, right? And it's the same thing with my kids. I said, you know, it's like, it's hard work and it's about, you know, working harder than everybody else. You might have more opportunity than others, but don't just rely on that and hope that it works out. Like you've got to work harder. And I think the same thing at work, you kind of have to set the right foundation, set the right kind of culture for the team so that at least they're operating within this boundary that's pretty wide because they have different things they need to do. but they know what the kind of the underlying DNA, culture, expectations, guidelines are. And so as long as they buy into that, I'm good, right? It's harder when you like when you kind of give them a lot of rope and you haven't given them a lot of guidance or a lot of kind of foundational, right, expectations, because then it can go many different ways. Yeah. I think that because we built that foundation as a team or even as a family, it's like, okay, like we know these are, it's going to be in between these two kind of, you know, guardrails, but I'm good with that. But if you go off a little bit, I'll come back and I'll make sure that you, that's kind of my job, right? Is you're going to make mistakes. You're going to fail. You're going to do some things that are surprising and successful and great. But I'm going to let you operate within these. And then if you get a little bit off, I'm going to kind of try to steer you back where you need to be.
Is there anything that you didn't expect? Cause you, I mean, you've moved up so many times, but like, I'm sure at every stage, it was like a different lesson, right?
Yeah. You know, I would say every move is scary. Every move, I think I've told my husband, I was like, I think they're going to figure out, I don't know what I'm doing. My boss is going to hate me. You know, I think everyone goes through that, like, you know, process of doubt and am I really ready? Did they pick the right person? You know, the imposter syndrome is a real problem. And I think what I've tried to do with every single move, whether it was from IC to like manager or, you know, manager to director, and then like senior director to VP, like all those moves, like the scope got broad much faster, right? It wasn't like 7 to 10 people. It was like 7 people to 30 people, 30 people to 100 people, 100 to 600, like it got big. And I think for me, it's always kind of like, I always have to recenter and say, okay, they picked me for a reason. There are things I'm good at. There are things I'm not great at. And the things I'm not great at, I need to surround myself with people who are great at those things so that we can operate in, as a whole. Right. And so that's where, like what we talked about at the beginning, I really do believe like it just take a village in life. It takes a village. I can't do my job if my EA doesn't do her job, if my, you know, senior directors don't do their job, my husband doesn't do his job, my kids don't do their job, right? Like it's one of those things where I can't do everything. And I've come to terms with that, but I need to make sure that the people around me complement my strengths, my weaknesses, and that we can operate like as a unit. So that's kind of how I do it. And I would say like every single time I've had to kind of rebuild that unit, right? And that part sometimes it's really easy. It's like, it just fits and it's easy. And sometimes it's hard. And I've been through those experiences where, you know, people didn't want me in that role, or they're older than me. And they were like, why didn't I get the role? And sometimes it never gets to a good place. Right. So I've been through those situations where it's not like it's been a perfect ride at all by any means. I've had there's been some big bumps and some big, you know, challenges that I've had to face in my career. And, but I've learned from every single one of those experiences. And it never really took me out. It may have gotten me down for a bit, but then I learned it humbled me. Every single of those moves is a really humbling experience. Cause you just realize like, oh my God, I really don't know what I'm doing. I got to figure it all out again. But I do think like when I look back on my career, I don't think of the successes. I more think of not the failures, but the challenges. Those are the highlights for me. And it's weird because those were like really, really, really hard moments or months or years sometimes. But the fact that I was able to get through it, got the team through it, got myself through it, and really kind of, you know, got the team to a better place is like the stuff that I really am proud of over the years.
That's interesting. And do you think if you weren't like a Vietnamese woman, you would have still had imposter syndrome, or is that more specific?
I think it's an everyone thing, maybe. I don't know. I don't think men go through it as much. I don't know. That's just my take. But I have a colleague who's not Vietnamese. And she and I talk about it. I'm like, are they going to figure out that like, we really don't know what we're doing, you know? It's just for me, it's not something I dwell on very long. It's literally just like a gut check of like, hey, I really need to keep learning and need to keep growing and need to keep doing and challenging myself, because I never want to get complacent. I never want to get to a point where I'm like, you know what? I'm good. I'm doing everything I should be doing. I'm absolutely perfect. That's never how I, you know, I want to be humbled, because I think it's important to keep growing. And that's the only reason I've been at this company for 18 years. It's not that, you know, it's been easy the whole time and it's been a cakewalk. It's actually been really hard at times, but I've learned every day. I've been challenged every day. I work with people who are like, ask me questions. I'm like, that's a great question. I have absolutely no idea. Let me go figure it out. And so it's something that kind of pushes me. I think imposter syndrome can really paralyze you if you let it, but it can also, if you kind of redirect that energy, that nervous kind of anxiety to, let me figure out why, and let me figure out the answer, and let me figure out how to grow. And then I think it's a really, it's not a great thing. It's hard to feel that way, but I think it can be a really positive thing.
Yeah. I mean, it does sound like everyone that has made it to your level has a very resourceful mentality, right? Like, you guys never dwell on anything more than like a couple minutes, really. It's like,
yeah, we're on time.
Yeah. It's more solution oriented and less problem focused, you know?
I think it has to be both, right? But you have to go through that process more quickly, right? So like, you know, anything that I have to kind of, you know, anytime there's change or a problem, you have to go through the process like, okay, what's wrong? What happened? Did something do, you know, did we do something wrong? How do we fix it? How do we fix it so it doesn't happen again? Like, you have to go through that process, right? And I think I've just learned to go through that process faster. I don't dwell on what's wrong as much as I used to. I used to like get absorbed into it and be like, oh my God, what I messed up. And how did I get myself into that situation? It's not like, okay, it happened. Now what? Like, how do we move forward? How do we get, you know, because otherwise it's like my team looks to me, my family looks to me to be that, like, okay, it's fine. Like, okay, you spilled milk. Now what? Got to clean it up and got to move on. And get, you know what I mean? Like, same idea, right? And so I do think like, you have to kind of acknowledge the problem, because if you don't, you might repeat itself. And that's my thing, is like, I don't care if you make a mistake, just don't make that mistake twice. Like that's where I need you to learn, right? That, and I need to learn too. It's like, how do we avoid that in the future? So I need to do, I'm a big postmortem person. And even if I don't do it outwardly, I do it in my head a lot. It's like, okay, did that wrong, or that didn't go that well. How can I do that differently, and all that stuff. So, you know, I do think it's a balance between the problem and the solution, though the solution needs to take up much more time, because that's what's going to solve for the problem. Right. So I think you dwell on the problem too much, then you can start to like spiral, and then nothing happens.
And do you read books, or do you have like a personal board of directors? Like, do you have like a go-to people when you have these, or is it like a combination of everything?
I have two kids, so I don't read as much as I want to. I used to read a lot, and now it's like once every couple months kind of thing, just because of like all the stuff that goes on. But I would say I always have a, you know, there's a question on the Gallup engagement survey. I don't know if you've ever taken it. It's like, do you have a best friend at work? Mm-hmm. Right. That's like the major question on that survey. And I get why they ask that question, right? Like, I know it confuses a lot of people, but I get it, right? It's like, do you have that confidant at work, or that person at work, that anything goes wrong, you're picking up the phone, you're like, okay, like, talk me through this, right? I have like seven of those people at work, right? And it's, I think a lot of it is just like, you have to invest in those relationships, because you have to be that person for them too. It's not just like a one-way street where I have a problem, you fix it, but when they have a problem, I'm like, I can't, I'm sorry, I'm too busy, right? I also have that outside of work, right? Like, my husband's been a huge supporter and partner for me, and he's the first one I call on anything, to be honest. He runs a, you know, he's an executive too. And he runs in a completely different industry, small company. Like, there's like 70 people in his company. I work at a 10,000 person company. Like, you know, so they're not a ton of parallels in the work that we do, but the issues that we have are similar, right? They're people oriented or business oriented. And I know for a fact, he's going to tell me the truth. Right. Like, there's no need for him to tell me anything other than like, why would you do it that way? Or why would you say it that way? Or, you know, sometimes there are emails that I write that I don't know how to word things. I send it to him and I have him like read it for me, that kind of stuff. Right. Where I would say like that, he's been my most ardent supporter and partner in all of this, through all the different promotions and bosses and integrations and companies. I would say he's probably been the most impactful for me.
Well, that reminds me, I need to leverage my wife a lot more, because she's super smart, but for some reason I don't ask her. Like, she's not my like automatic go-to. It's usually work people that I usually go to.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think I do that too. Right. But I would say like, for me, when it's really hard and I'm trying to figure out how to even approach my work people, right. Cause it's not like you can just call up and be like, hey, I got a problem. It's like, okay, I got to like figure out how to position it, how to say it, how to get them to like understand what I'm going through. With him, there's no need to like couch it, spin it. It's just like, hey, here's a problem. What do I do? And sometimes he's like, I don't know. Let's talk about it. Or sometimes he has an answer, or he'll be like, hey, this is what we did when this happened. Right. Or he'll question me a lot. He'll push me. He'll challenge me. It's like, hey, have you guys ever done it this way? You know, like we were talking about launching a program for one of our, you know, diversity programs. He was like, are you guys going to measure it? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, I just wanted to get it off the ground. And he was like, are you going to measure it? And he's like, how are you going to do this and this? He's an engineer. So his mind works really differently from mine. And so like, that's when you talk, you know, we talked about complimenting and where am I, I'm not as strong. And he, you know, finding someone who's strong where I'm weak. It's been a very good partnership and marriage for almost, you know, 17 years now. So, ask your wife. I'm sure she has some good feedback for you.
No, she's really smart. And like you said, she's like the opposite of me in so many ways. So it works out because like she'll have a completely different way of looking at things. I'm like, oh, right.
That's important though. Right. Because I think a lot of times, like, you know, for me, I always tell my guys this. I've been here a long time. And so all I know is this company and how we've done it and what we do. So when you come in from the outside, whether it's, you know, hanging out with someone like you or with my husband or, you know, someone who's new to the company, I'm like, tell me what it's like outside of these walls, because I've been in these walls for so long and it's not a bad thing, but it's the perspective that I have and I've had for a long time. Right. So, you know, that's why, like, when you ask the question about like, when do you start kind of challenging status quo and working on other stuff other than your job, I say right away, because I need it as the leader of, you know, of this team, I need you to start asking me questions right away because it's still fresh in your mind. A year from now, you've kind of been indoctrinated into the way we do business and what we do. And then that stuff starts to fade. Right. So all that stuff I think is really important.
I mean, it's very clear that you have a learning mindset, you know, like you're very open to, I mean, I think that makes sense, right? Like the most successful people have a beginner's mindset in the sense that they still think there's so much more to learn. Whereas like people who are, you know, Carol Dweck's, you know, are more fixed mindset, right? So that's interesting. Yeah, you're very open.
I think it's the only way that I can function, right? Because, and like, you know, and I know that there are moments, you know, in my career where I've received feedback that I wasn't expecting. And I still remember those moments very, very clearly. And I've learned from every single one of those moments. And, you know, and I think that it's important, right? It's like I said, it's a humbling process. All of this is super humbling in a good way. It pushes me to learn and it pushes me to try to make everything better. Like, you know, I don't know if you've ever done Strengths Finders, Gallup Strengths. Yep. My number one strength is maximizer. Literally take what's there and make it better. Like that's the strength. But I will say that wasn't my strength when I was in IC. When I was IC, I was an achiever, an arranger, an organizer, like all the things that have helped me get to this place. But now that I've run a big org for a while, maximizer shot from like number 14 or something like that to number one, which rarely happens. They say that usually your top five or your top five and they kind of rearrange themselves, but rarely do they like change. But I think that's how I've had to kind of shift the way that I look at things and the way I operate. And kind of what we were talking about is I can't do it all by myself anymore. I used to be able to when it was one kid and just my job, like as an IC, easy, right? I could do that all day long. But now it's like I run an org of 600 people. I run, you know, I help run my son's baseball stuff. I, you know, might have two kids now. They're busy, they're older, all those things. It's like I had to start to relinquish, but then be able to influence and get everyone to kind of operate at a higher level. That's kind of like, so it's, you know, I do think the learner mindset is, but the fix it one is there too. All of it's there.
You think so?
I think so. I like fixing things. I also like checking things off the list. So it's a big thing for me.
Well, thank you so much, Michelle. Time flies by and so many valuable insights. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of folks reached out to you and gave you feedback on how helpful this was.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot.
Appreciate you taking time. And despite, you know, doing so much, you're still able to make time to give back to the community. So I appreciate you.
I'm happy to do it. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah.